Our New Testament passage this morning is, again, Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through 12 or 13. On one page I have it marked as 12, and on the other I have it marked as 13. So let's see what it actually is. Gospel of Matthew chapter 5. We are continuing in our series on the Beatitudes. We are 3 weeks in now. It's verse 12. I was right the first time. I told you that each week I'm going to read it from a different translation. So this week I've got the English Standard Version. So, all right, hear now the word of our Lord, Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through 12. Seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." This is the reading of God's word for the people of God today. Thanks be to God. As I said, we are continuing in our series on the Beatitudes, and in our first couple sermons, we looked at the idea of the Beatitudes being a New Testament equivalent to the Old Testament blessings upon the people of Israel. As such, this puts us in the position of the new Israel in the new covenant, one in which those who are listed here receive the blessings of God. In the Old Testament, we see that under the promise, the people of Israel were to receive the blessing of the land. God promised to Abraham that his descendants would receive the land upon which he was living, that he would also have many descendants, so they would be numerous, and that through them all people on earth would be blessed. We see the fulfillment of all three of these, the land, the numbers, the blessing, and a relationship with God being fulfilled throughout the Old Testament. But with that came the stipulation that they had to remain faithful to God. We see that in Deuteronomy with the list of the blessings and curses. The blessings were if they remained faithful to God, the curses if they did not remain faithful to God. And as long as they remained faithful, his blessings would stay with them. When we get to the New Testament, we get to the New Covenant, we get to the new promised people, the new people of God, the new Israel. And we have only this list of blessings. We don't have the curses. But we still have the stipulation of if you want to receive these blessings, you have to remain faithful to God. So as you go through the list, those who mourn and are faithful to God will receive that blessing. Those who are humble and who are faithful to God will receive that blessing. And so on and so forth. We went on to look at the first two in this list of those who Christ pronounces as blessed. The first being those who are poor in spirit. Not necessarily those who are poor financially, although some of them may have been, but the poor in spirit, meaning that they are aware of their sinful state and their complete need for Jesus, their complete need for God, and in turn are completely penitent for their sins. And in their penitence, they will receive the promise of forgiveness and an inheritance in the kingdom of heaven. And then last week, we came to the second, which are blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. And last week, we talked about the many interpretations of this beatitude, from those who mourn being those who are in grief, to those who are deeply mourning over their sinfulness, thereby connecting it to the first beatitude. Then we talked about the third approach to this beatitude, in which Jesus is talking about everyone who could possibly be categorized as being in mourning. Mourning over loss, mourning over their sins, mourning over their situation, mourning over a feeling of complete helplessness. And that no matter what the circumstances, God will comfort those who come to Him and put their trust in Him. Well, this week we move on to the third of our Beatitudes. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Now, again, we find numerous translations of this. Some of them will translate it as meek, such as the translation that I read this morning. Others will simply translate it as those who are humble. Blessed are the humble. And still others will find additional ways to try to get this idea across. When we hear the word meek or humble, there are a lot of different things that come to our mind. Humble, on one hand, brings with it the idea of those who simply are not boastful. You're not overly proud, you're not overly arrogant, you're humble, you don't brag about yourself. When you get the idea of someone who is meek, we come with all kinds of other ideas. Some people look at being meek as being a bad thing, because after all, if you're meek, that means you're not willing to stand up for yourself. You're just willing to let yourself be walked all over and people take advantage of you, and that's not a good thing. Others look at meekness as simply being shy, not being willing to put yourself out there. You're content to kind of be back in the background, and it's okay if people don't notice me. And then there are all kinds of other ways that we can interpret meekness and what it means. Some good, some bad. And a lot of it left up to interpretation. When looking at the various ways in which theologians have approached this beatitude, particularly John Wesley and those other commentaries that I've been drawing from for this series, there are a number of ways in which these commentators put it. John Wesley simply said that there are those that hold their passions and affections evenly balanced, which I'll admit, when I first think about meekness, passions and affections are not the first thing that comes to my mind. When looking deeper at what he's talking about here, you know, you think about those who do not keep their passions and affections evenly balanced, those who let their emotions overrule their judgments. What kind of people do we see in this category? We see people who often lash out, people who are short-tempered, and people who don't really think much before they act. And so if we look at the opposite of that, those who do feel all the same emotions and passions that we do, but don't allow them to rule every single aspect of their life, those who don't let their affections toward people overrule their good judgments, you do find a sort of humbleness, a sort of meekness. Think of the judge who, although they may feel passionately about a topic, will rule fairly. Whether it aligns with their personal beliefs or not, they rule fairly. Those who are willing to punish even those they love, because they know what's right. And so in John Wesley's understanding of meekness, we find people who are willing to do what's right, even when there are not so pleasant consequences. Moving on, we see other commentators understand it as being humble and modest. This in contrast to being quick-tempered, arrogant, and proud. And think about the proud people that all go around. It's all about them. The arrogant, the proud. And they don't care about the little guy, because the little guy is there to serve them after all. These are the people that put themselves before others, and who are willing to step on anyone if it means bettering themselves. So if you look at the meek as being the opposite of that, you find those who are willing to put others before themselves. They are humble. They are not proud. They know their accomplishments, but they're not so proud and arrogant that they want to boast about it to everyone. In fact, it's these people that on job applications, you have to tell them it's okay to sell yourself. They're willing to be there and do what needs to be done, but they don't need all the glory. Because ultimately the glory goes to someone else. The meek surrenders everything to the Lord, and they're willing to bear whatever they have to, as long as God gets the glory. They lovingly trust God and hope in God's timing and His justice. Sometimes that means they have to suffer. Sometimes it means they're going to be humble. But they do not seek revenge, because they know that God is still in control. They seek God's glory and the welfare of others. Now, this doesn't mean they just let people walk all over them. I know some people who are very kind-hearted, and they just want what's best for everyone else. But because of this, they sometimes will let themselves get walked right over. I know one person who is actually a member of my family, very nice, very humble person, but he kind of lets himself get walked over it. He doesn't often fight for himself. On the other hand, I know someone who is, I would categorize as the humblest man I have ever met. He is a 2-star general. I had the opportunity to meet retired Chief of Chaplains of the Air Force, Cecil Richardson. One of the most humble men I've ever met. Here he was, a 2-star general, talking to a group of cadets, which in the military, you know, you think about, you know, you have the officers, you have the enlisted, and at the bottom of the enlisted, you have the E1. Well, cadets are E0s. We're below the low. We're lower than the privates. And here was this 2-star general talking to us, and he said, "I am so honored to be here with you today." One of the most humble men I've ever met. But you know he didn't let people walk all over him. He was a 2-star general. When he gave an order, he expected it to be followed. But his heart, his love, his compassion for others was shown in the fact that he wasn't proud. He admitted his mistakes. He made some big ones. He sought the glory of God above all else and the welfare of others.
when I think about people that can be categorized as meek, I do see people like Chaplain Richardson. And you think about it, the ultimate example of meekness is Jesus. Jesus is referred to many times as being meek. He is humble. But did Jesus let people walk all over him?
No.
Jesus had authority. And he used that authority not to subjugate others to his will, but rather to share the good news. He ate with sinners. He associated with the poor. And he was willing to give somebody else the seat of honor. It wasn't all about him. When it came time for the triumphal entry into Jerusalem, he rode on the humblest of animals. He rode on a donkey. Now, when you think of proud animals worthy of a king to ride on, you don't think of a donkey. Jesus set the example of being humble and meek. And these are the people that Jesus is talking about here in this beatitude, that he is pronouncing these blessings over, those who are not proud and arrogant, but also not necessarily those who let people walk all over.
Today, you know, it's not about them. It's about God. Here in this beatitude, we have an echo of Psalm 37. This countercultural idea that those who inherit the land, those who inherit the earth, are not the proud, the arrogant, those who lift themselves up above others, but rather humble, lowly, meek, and humble. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. I'm looking at this inherit the earth. What does it mean that they will inherit the earth? We have a couple different approaches to it. The first is that they shall enjoy whatever portion God has given them here. So in the short term, yes, they will inherit a portion of the land here. It may not be the largest portion of the land. Maybe a cardboard box in that. But they will enjoy whatever portion God has given them here, and they will be content with whatever large or small portion that is. Hereafter, they will possess the new earth. Wherein here you find a parallel or connection to the first beatitude. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for they will inherit the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the new earth. We have the promise of the new heaven and the new earth. And here in the poor in spirit and meek, we have these two. We also have this comparison to the Old Testament promise of land. You know, part of the blessings upon the people of Israel was that they would inherit the physical land. The land of Israel. And again, we have this this promise of those who will inherit the earth or inherit the land. Some might see this as being physical. In fact, we see that in the conquering of nations, what happens to the proud and the arrogant and the violent? Do they receive the land once the conquerors are done? Not really. They are often humbled and cast aside. We also have this promise of the new earth, the new land, the new Israel. That is what is being promised to those who are living. And in this we'll find a real countercultural nature. We'll see this with many of the Beatitudes, most of the Beatitudes actually. Both today and especially in the century of the first years of this, it was not the meek who had all the land and all the property and all the wealth. Because the meek were the ones that people tried to walk with. Instead, you find those who take part in violence and wrath and theft and takeovers and corruptness, who seize the land from those who will not take part in these other. We see in the time of Jesus, despite the laws that God had put in place to ensure that the inheritance given to each family would be for lasting generations. Which was one of the things I really liked about the law, the civil laws that God gave the people, that every 7 years the land would go back. We don't see that in the New Testament. What do we see happening in the New Testament? We see those who are willing to step on others, those who seize power. We see the corrupt seizing land from others. And Jesus promises that although they may have the land now, they're going to gain all the wealth they want in this world. They're going to step on others. They will lift themselves above the others. In the end, it is those who are weak who will receive the true inheritance. You may have lost your family land now, but that's okay. There is a greater inheritance waiting for you. The new heaven and the new earth. If you're willing, and this also goes against the beliefs of the zealots who thought, you know, our land has been taken. God promises us a Messiah. And when that Messiah comes, he's going to come and seize this land from the evil invaders. But he's taking a long time. Maybe we want to start the war. That's who the zealots. The zealots thought the only way we will get this promised land back, the only way we will get our inheritance back is if we seize it by force. So they launched wars and attacks and raids and acts of terrorism. We would classify as terrorism. To seize back their inheritance by force. Well, look at Roman history and what happened in 70 AD to the city of Jerusalem, and we'll see that that didn't work out very well. And keep in mind, Jesus had disciples who were there who were zealots. One of the 12 apostles was a man by the name of Simon who was known as Simon the Zealot. And Jesus said, it is not those who use violence to seize the land who will inherit it. It's those who are weak, humble, and submit themselves. What I see here is an echoing of Jesus' teaching. The first shall be last, and the last shall be first. Those who are proud and arrogant and seek to put themselves first, in the end, they will find themselves last. Those who are willing to be last for the sake of others and for the sake of God will find their true allegiance. Jesus says, be holy as I am. We can extend this to say, be humble as I am humble. Now, brothers and sisters, in today's world, we do live in a very different world than that in which Jesus first spoke his words, but there are still those today who think that the only way they're going to get ahead is to do everything they can, even if it means putting others down so that they can get up. Around cross country, there was always at least a couple people that in the middle of a race, if someone was gaining on them, right as they were about to pass them, you know what they would do? Put their arm out. Knock them down so that they could stay ahead. My sister got a good black eye. There will always be people in this world who try to advance themselves by stepping on others, and who will encourage you to do the same. If you want to get ahead in this world, you can't worry about anybody else. That's what they'll tell you. If you want to get the promotion, that means doing anything necessary, even putting down those who are also looking to get the same promotion. If you want to get elected, in this country, you have to play dirty. That's what they try to say. I know of one state politician back in Illinois who refused to run a dirty campaign, and so his own political party came against him. There will always be people in this world who say the meek get stepped on, and those who are willing to be assertive are the ones who are going to succeed. But Jesus says, no. The meek will inherit the earth. Not the bottom, not the corrupt. Not the proud. The proud will be humble. And the humble will be lifted up. And even in the church, there will be temptation. Try to seize power. We see this on a large church scale. With church leaders doing anything they can to make sure they get that power. Because if they get that power, then they can set everything right. Then the process will happen. Jesus commands us to follow his example. Because the reward is in heaven. So, my brothers and sisters, I don't know when There will be times when you are tempted. There will be times when you are tested. Hold on to the promise that if you remain true to the Lord,